Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hello, fans. Thank you for tuning in. I'm here today with Iman Blow. She's a professional athlete and performance consultant, pre-medical Columbia University graduate and world-class athlete who is passionately involved in performance education and development. Over the past 10 years, Iman has functioned as a coach and athlete educator while simultaneously managing an award-winning academic and athletic career. After ending the 2020 Olympic season as an alternate for Team USA in fencing, Blow continues with the goals of competing in the 2024 Olympic Games in France and matriculating into medical school. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and taking time out of your day to share your story.
Thank you for inviting me and having me here.
Yeah, so I first just want to talk about your journey into the sport of fencing. As a sports dietitian myself, I've worked with lots of sports, and I do not want to pretend like I know anything about this sport because I don't. And I'm so excited you're our first fencing athlete that we've had on this podcast. And you started it at such a young age. You know, I think back to like my exposure to the sport of fencing is really just in watching it in the Olympics. So how did you get exposed to this sport that's certainly not as mainstream as soccer, you know? How did you get exposed to it at such a young age?
Yeah, I will definitely say that I did a lot of the other traditional sports. I was just terrible at it. So I did baseball with my twin brother when we were probably 3 or 5 and hit no baseballs all season. And I played basketball in middle school or, you know, elementary, middle school, but couldn't shoot the ball. And I did dance and all the types of dance, but I can dance, but not great. And it just so happened that one of our family camp friends, so we all went to camp and my brothers were friends with this group of brothers, suggested that we do a program called the Peter Westbrook Foundation in the city, which was like a Saturday enrichment program, they said. And at that time, and still to this day, it was led by and is led by world champions and Olympian people of color who teach like young people how to fence. So I didn't specifically seek fencing out necessarily or see something particularly that was like, hey, what is this sport? Let me try it and nag my parents. But I think fortunately, I just knew people who knew the sport and they introduced me to it.
Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that, you know, you had exposure to a bunch of different things and just kept that open mind to trying different things. I think your story really highlights that if you find, you know, something that you're good at, it doesn't matter how many things were just okay, I don't know, just doing it just for fun, like by continuing to have an open mind and say yes to an opportunity, you found, you know, in time that, whoa, this is something you can really, really excel at.
Yeah, I would definitely credit my parents, and I'm fortunate they had the ability to, I don't know what the term is, like move me around to all these different programs to give me that opportunity to try. And then also the people in that foundation for even providing me with the notion that I could be great at this sport. I think it's a combination of exposure, but also intentional contact and mentoring and education in that sport.
Yeah, it sounds like this foundation did a lot of that, of mentoring, building people up, and really, yeah, more than just exposure, really mentoring you to that. So that sounds like a really amazing foundation. Can you repeat the name of it? And is it a national foundation or local to where you are?
It's in Manhattan. It's called the Peter Westbrook Foundation.
Okay, amazing. Yeah. And is that where you grew up? in New York City.
Mm-hmm. I've been fencing with them for over 15 years now. The program is structured so that there was like a Saturday enrichment program, which is what I started in, which is only 3 hours on a Saturday. And then athletes who are seen to be particularly passionate or adept in the sport are then selected to do it after school, like any other after school sport activity, but kind of intensively because it goes quickly from 2 days a week to then like 4 or 5 days a week as you get older. And then they continue the foundation when they are, for me, it was 14, but when people are like 18 plus, some of them become instructors and they still come every Saturday. But instead of being the people who are mentored, they are the mentors now. So they kind of grow into that role of continuing the cycle of inputting these ideas of like greatness and excellence into younger people and then becoming that greatness and excellence.
It sounds like this foundation really shaped you because as we'll continue this conversation, but just you as a person are somebody who's not just a successful athlete, but I think your mindset plays a huge role in who you are as a person and your success as an athlete. And, you know, hearing words like greatness and excellence already come out of your mouth, these are things that, like, I think you have a really strong mindset.
Thank you.
And this is why you speak on it as well and mentor other athletes on it. So it sounds like this foundation might have even kind of been the first, you know, kind of laying the groundwork for you to build a really strong mind. I heard in somewhere on a video that you were speaking on, you had this really great line. I'm not going to get it word for word. I should have written it down, but you said something along the lines of like, if you're going to compete, like you've got to go into competition with the goal to win, because if you don't, then you're accepting kind of like, I don't know if you want to expand upon that, because we're also going to talk about how you actually have a really great mindset around setbacks and quote unquote failures as well. But to have the attitude of going into a competition with the sole goal of I'm going to win this, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So that was like an interlude clip from when I won the 2018 NCAA championships and they did like a recap of it. They actually did film the recap, or they interviewed me after I'd already won, and they asked me what my goal was this year. And immediately I was like, if your goal isn't to win, your goal is to lose. And I think about that, you know, I've revised those thoughts since that point, but the gist of it was quite literally, if your goal in a competition where there are placements includes a placement, right? Like a quantifiable goal that isn't first, then you are actually having a goal that includes winning up to a point and then losing, quite literally. Like if your goal is to come in third place or to come in at least third place, then part of that goal is it's okay if I lose. And my idea was when you go into an environment, you want your goals to give you as much opportunity and room to grow as possible. And now as like an older athlete, that was maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I look at goal setting now to be more than just quantifiable goals, but also qualifiable goals. For instance, you know, perform to my best, make sure I'm focused throughout the whole thing. Things of those sorts, which I mean, some of them are fencing specific, some of them are not, but goals that are around maximizing everything that I can give without this idea of like, I'm going to preemptively cap what I believe I can give into this experience.
Exactly. It's not like, I think we can all sit here and say like, if you get second, third, fifth place, but you did your absolute best, that's amazing, something to be proud of. But going into it with the mindset of not limiting yourself. So going into it with the goal of I'm trying to win, that's the point of competition, and let me give myself that opportunity is huge. So I think that's what I call that, like having a really fierce mindset. That's just a term that really resonates with me. And I think it's such a balance, because in a world where we want to also be accepting and understanding of second place, of third place, and be really, really, really proud of that, you also want to go into it giving yourself as much opportunity. Because if you shoot to win and then end up getting third, fifth place, whatever it might be, like, you know, you did your best. But if you go into it thinking, whatever I do is whatever I do, we might not be giving 100%. So another kind of like very famous quote that comes to mind from the running world is, to give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift. And that comes from Steve Prefontaine, because it's, you know, give your best and you are showing yourself and the world this amazing gift that you have. So
a quote that I always liked was, shoot for the stars, and if you don't catch them, like, you'll catch the moon on the way down. Something of that sort, which was what I really was abiding by.
Yeah.
And just to kind of, I mean, to conclude the thought, I would always have dual goals. Like, particularly when you're looking at a season, you don't have to win every competition in a season to be an Olympic champion. You also don't have to win every competition in a season to make a team that allows you to compete at the next level, right? A lot of sports, you have the regular season, then the championship season, things of that sort. But the idea is, going into the competition, there can only be one goal. Now, after the competition, if you happen to fall slightly short or super short of that, you don't have to berate yourself for not achieving that goal or think, oh, why would I even make such a big goal? That was so dumb. Like, how could I think that I could do that? The only way that you ever get all the way there is if you keep aiming for there. So I would have like two mindsets. Like, there's only one place while I'm competing. And then if I win or if I came in second, whatever, afterwards, I would then have a different mindset of, have I accomplished and worked towards my ultimate larger goals? Because this competition is over. Did I, you know, do enough to be on track towards my larger goals?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think you have so many points in your career where shifting between those mindsets has really proven so effective for you. So like one example I'll bring up is, I know when you won the 2018 NCAA individual title, that was actually right after, you know, the loss of not making a national team. So you were able to, you know, not making the national team, then in that like reflection period, think about, what are my bigger goals, and then be able to come, you know, reach something so great soon after. So that's probably one example. I don't know if you want to expand on that. And then another example is our 2020 Tokyo Olympics, where, you know, you went into that, of course, with the goal of wanting to make the team, did amazing, but ended up being an alternate, which is an amazing accomplishment. But of course, for you thinking, oh, but I wanted to make the team. But in that, some really amazing things happened in the aftermath of that for you, and some amazing opportunities based on the mindset that you were able to tap into. So can you kind of expand on how shifting your mindset in light of what might be considered a failure or not reaching your goal can also lead to reaching your goals later on?
Yeah, I think in recent years, I focus a lot more on how I'm doing things versus what actually comes out of it. Because in life, there are so many unexpected variables. A lot of the times, sometimes they're internal things that you can control. A lot of the times, they are external things that you cannot control. An example is like the passing of Simone Biles' relative during the Olympics. She could not control that. Heavily affected her ability to compete to the point she didn't compete, right? I think Lolo Jones at the Olympics, when she, you know, clipped the hurdle, she possibly could have controlled that. Maybe, maybe not, you know, but what's the likelihood that you've been jumping hurdles your whole life and all of a sudden you clip it at this particular moment, right? So there's like these errors that you make due to competition, these external things that are happening. Sometimes, like, I remember when Serena Williams was in a competition and the referee might have been being, we call them referees in fencing, slightly biased towards her. And they that moment where they carded her, they made that whole like cartoon of her looking like a caricature that was a little bit racist. But, you know, in fencing, I say that because in fencing, you have so many characters. You have the referee who can be heavily impactful or have a great impact on the match. Then you have any circumstance surrounding that competition. And I know the only thing I can control is how I am approaching all of these different things, how I am approaching competition, how I am navigating these challenges. And so in that 2018 example, I didn't make the senior national team. And then I thought about, like, why didn't I make it? Now, there's obviously a million moments over that season where I probably could have won more tournaments, basically, and made the team, right? But in that last moment, the way that I entered that match that I lost, I realized I wasn't focused enough and, like, present enough in that moment. And I had about 5 days before I entered the NCAA National Championships, and that was my biggest focus. Like, here was this error that I clearly saw that I personally made during this, you know, season of competition and this league. And now I have such a quick turnaround, but I have to develop that skill, which I was lacking before, of being able to face challenges and quickly adapt to them and refresh myself for a new one. And I think that's kind of like the same energy that I entered the Olympics with. Like, how am I doing things in my life? Am I content with those? How can I improve the way that I am doing things? And then everything else, you know, I can't control that.
Mm-hmm. Really figuring out what is outside of my control, what is within my control. And so often what's within our control is, yeah, how we show up, our attitudes, our behaviors, our energy that we put into things, your focus, you know, and it's less about the what and more about the how. Yeah. Really, really inspirational. And I think that kind of brings us to, you know, some of the work that you do in a, obviously you're an athlete and doing great work there and pre-med, which I want to talk to you about as well. But one of your slogans and how you work with mentoring other athletes, you have a quote that is aspire to inspire. Can you tell us how you came up with this message and what that means for you?
Yeah, it was originally like aspire to inspire. And I, you know, created like a phrase, you know, I aspire to inspire the champion of myself and others. And for me, it means three basic things. One, that my aspiration or one of my large aspirations and goals is literally to inspire someone else. The second meaning is, you know, I aspire to be a person that can be an inspiration, which to me is a more indirect thing. It's like when you read stories or watch somebody else existing in the world or doing something you might want to do or facing a challenge in a certain way, that can be inspirational. And the third one, which I believe is the most symbiotic or like kind of community and interactive component, is the cyclical idea that if I aspire to inspire you, but you being inspired and being a little bit greater than you were a moment before, or, you know, in a prior moment, in turn inspires me to be better. So first one is like direct kind of mentoring, actively trying to inspire people. The second one is living in a way and existing in a way which I personally feel like is inspirational. And then the third is having this dynamic kind of growth cycle, positive reinforcement cycle of inspiring one another in a community.
Yeah, it's so true how that happens. When you inspire other people, then it's like you're living a greater life yourself, and it's so cyclical. I love how that happens, just the transfer of energy, you know, when you step into that mindset.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the Fast Track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
And how important is it for you specifically to show to people of color and Black athletes, you know, to inspire them to step into their full potential? Because this is obviously already in today's podcast, you know, you have mentioned some of our most impressive athletes that are Black people of color, Lolo Jones, Serena Williams. You know, how important is that for you to make sure that that community is
being inspired by people like yourself?
Yeah, so I am of the particular mindset that due to the social and emotional conditioning of a lot of environments that people of color are in, whether that is a school environment, in their communities, consuming content on social media or television, there's a lot of active and passive education that they have a lower potential, they are less valuable, they are innately and naturally not as good as other. And I think it's really important to intercept that kind of robbing of potential and power that people of color have by trying to, you know, reduce their confidence and understanding of their own abilities. And so I think that every positive example of a person of color and every active, you know, conversation and outreach of a person of color to another or an individual to another that empowers them can aid in the, like, the justification of this process. So, like, instead of having these negative messages that are corrupting people's beliefs in their own life and potential, giving these positive messages that reaffirm the fact that Black people, like other people, are very capable. So as long as they have opportunities, are able to make connections and work towards the things that they deem are possible. So showing them that there are way more possibilities that people are telling you there are, and helping them attain those possibilities, I think is really important to me.
Absolutely. And I think you're living that yourself, right? By just, you know, doing what you do, living your life, aspiring to inspire, you are being part of that mission that needs to continue. So it's absolutely inspirational, which is your goal. And it's happening. So I think another, like, kind of question I had for you just regarding your journey with sport is, at what point, when we're a young athlete, it's for exposure, it's for fun, but you started competing on the national level when you were 12, 13, 14, and you started winning at a really young age as well. At what point for you, if at all, was there like a moment or a switch of like, of competition? Was it always competition or was it fun? And then it, like, that drive for competition was added on. Like, at what point did you begin recognizing, like, this is competition instead of fun? Or both, you know, not instead of, but.
I don't know if it was fun for a while.
No?
I don't know when it became fun, honestly, I have to tell you that. Because it's, I actually didn't like fencing in the beginning. And my dad told me that I had to try it out for like a month. And I enjoyed the Saturday program. And then he put us in the after school one, me and my twin brother. And he said, okay, try this out for a month. See if you like it. If you don't, you can stop. And at like 3 weeks, my brother was like, we do the same thing every day. I'm tired of this. So he stopped. And a week later, I was like, you know what? My body hurts. I don't really like that. I don't want to fence anymore. And my dad said, no. And I said, okay. First thought was like, this is sexism because I have a twin brother. We're the same age, you know, same person, except, you know, he's a boy, I'm a girl, whatever at the time, right?
Yeah.
And then my dad was like, fencing will take you places. And I was like, at the time, I was only going down the block from my house to a club that was really close to me and into the city to the club I was attending. And so I'm thinking, places, you're out of your mind. This is crazy and unfair, but I guess I'm going to keep fencing. And fencing has taken me a lot of places, nationally, internationally, internally, externally. But I would say that the moment in which I really embraced fencing for more than just like a physical training point, because I didn't like practicing because it was hard, but from like an ideological standpoint, like understanding the sport and wanting to get better at performing the sport, was probably when I was 15, like 6 years later. It took me.
Wow.
Took me, yeah, I think until I was about 15, maybe 14, to really think, I'm going to take ownership over this thing that I'm doing every single day of my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually going to invest myself in it because I see what I can do with it and I enjoy playing this game. But I will also say that for me, it's always really been about community. Like, the thing that I enjoy the most into this day is the community and is being around all these people who are pushing themselves through challenges. But the challenges themselves are not always fun at all. So that's why when you say fun, I'm like, pretty challenging, but I enjoy doing this challenging thing with these other people.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that because, yeah, I was probably just using that word fun and like, and we want to do things that make us happy, blah, blah, blah. But like, there's when we
take ownership, take responsibility, challenge ourselves, even if it's not always like super fun or making us happy in that moment. Those are things that build us as a person, build us as, you know, develop our character, teach us amazing life lessons, and also open opportunities, which it sounds like is what your father kept telling you. This will give you opportunities. And with opportunity come things that fulfill your life and that bring purpose to your life as well. So I actually really appreciate you sharing that, just, you know, that the, with sports and other things in life, like sometimes it is about the dedication of and what that can bring to your life. So of course, along the way, I think you've had a lot of, like you said, like, okay, you know, I've started to embrace it. I'm doing it every single day. Let me try and have some fun or enjoy it as I'm doing it. So that's amazing. So I'd love to shift gears and talk about your nutrition journey a little bit. And I actually want to tie this into you being pre-med at Columbia University, which I would imagine is very, very challenging. I was following along on your Instagram, like on your highlights, and you had this highlight. I'm going to pull out a little like clip. You probably don't even remember saying this, but you said that the kidneys are your favorite organ and you find them really fascinating. And then you started talking about the importance of hydration. And I would imagine you said that about the kidneys, probably because of what you were studying in school and like learning about them and stuff. Can you tell us a bit about the role of hydration, how you find that so important in your performance or just as a human and in your health?
Yeah, definitely. So I'll be honest, prior to the Olympic trials, I was not drinking water. And I wonder why I'm still using the bathroom. Like, that's how little water I was drinking, because I'm like, where is this water coming from?
Wow.
If I put none of it into my body? But just, I guess for people listening, water, weirdly enough, comes from your blood. And even if you don't consume water for 2 or 3 days, there's always a level of water in your blood. And even if only some of it's coming out, it has to be excreted to make sure that the toxins in your bloodstream and around your body come out. But for me, hydration was honestly this combination of a nutrition thing and then also a performance habit making, goal setting thing that I did at the beginning. Because I was like, something very simple that can really change a lot of things would be to drink more water. And that was the first kind of habit that I started tracking on my 150, 200, you know, whatever day journey to the end of the Olympic trials. And I started drinking about a gallon of water per day, because there's various recommendations. Honestly, the idea is you don't want to ever be thirsty. So drinking enough water so that you don't get thirsty is enough water, basically. So just think drinking water throughout the day or a large amount of water at different periods of the day is important. But the benefits are obviously like sleep regulation. You remove the toxins from your body quicker, can help with your digestive system. There's just a lot of reasons why water can be helpful. Simple wakefulness, like that's one of the simplest visceral things you can experience. So like not like microbiology, but just like you can notice it. If you wake up, you drink a glass of water. For me, like my eyes feel like they're a little more open. So that was one of my favorite things to begin with, because I knew that actively and passively it had a lot of impact, but it was also that like stepping stone to creating and maintaining all these other habits. After I was able to get down that water intake, I could then stack on other things that were a little more, again, like external and experiential versus kind of micro.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100% that when we think about improving your health or your performance as an athlete, like what are some of the most major things? And some people want to get right down to the nitty gritty of like, what supplements do I need? And it's like, wait a second, how's your sleep and how's your hydration? Those two things impact our health and performance so massively. And you're right. There's a lot of recommendations on hydration. We actually just did a deep dive like with my clients on it over the past month. But I do think that just bringing awareness to it and thinking like, can I drink a little bit more than I was before? Can I start my day with water? Can I carry a water bottle with me all day? You mentioned that if you feel thirsty, or that a goal of yours is to not feel thirsty. And that's actually because, yeah, once we become about 1-2% dehydrated, it changes some of the hormones that are released in our kidneys and changes our blood pressure and sends a signal to your brain that you're thirsty. So when you get that signal to your brain saying, I'm thirsty, you're probably already about 1-2% dehydrated. And so if you can stay on top of that, then you know you're probably reaching euhydration or balanced hydration, right? So that's just such a wonderful goal. And the kidneys are absolutely amazing. Even if you weren't drinking water, somehow they were working, keeping you alive, still functioning. We do get water from other sources too, like food and stuff, you know.
Because it's like if you could drink juice every day and still get water, but then some of the elements in the juice would need to also be processed out of your body. Like after it was saturated with all that it needed, that would still need to be processed out. So then the amount of water that you're actually able to retain or use for other reasons, and the amount of water that like stays in your blood to keep it like well concentrated is lesser because you're using some of it to pass through the other elements in the water. But I would also say, I feel like hydration as it pertains to nutrition and then just also like general habit changing and like lifestyle, or like when people start to like make changes, sometimes like I need the most expensive thing and I need the most like incomprehensible like vitamin or food diet or X, Y, and Z, when a lot of basic nutrition and basic habit setting is like very small things. It's not that you can't be on your phone at all. That's not a problem. It's maybe that like when you feel yourself randomly on your phone, that's when you're not on your phone anymore. Like don't do it in those moments where you actually have no reason to really be there. Or it's not that you have to only eat salads all the time and eat no carbs. It's just that, have you eaten any vegetables? Have you eaten like a range of things today? Have you eaten a range of things this week that you feel like make you feel fueled? Or like, do you feel good after you eat these certain things? Do you feel good after you eat this amount or this three times as much amount? And so I think it's easy to have these drastic reactions, these kind of binge and purge type of approach to eating, to lifestyle choices, to everything, when really it's about small changes and adjustments, mm-hmm. both again, like to your habits and maybe to your eating.
Mm-hmm. Right. Habits and behaviors really driving it, as opposed to huge swaps in foods or ingredients like right away. Yeah, absolutely. And I think speaking to your own experiences with nutrition too, another thing, as I was following some of your content and stuff, I got sucked into your Instagram highlights. You have a little highlight on nutrition, and sometimes you just like set up the phone or the camera. You've got this like chill music playing in the background and you're just like very calmly and nicely putting together your plate. And I was like, I was in this like zen moment with you and it was really nice. Like, is that how you approach all your meals, or was that just an Instagram highlight? Like, do you find that making a plate kind of look a certain way makes it more of an enjoyable experience for you?
Yeah, I feel the same way about that as I did about like taking notes in school, which is like, if it looks good, it makes me, I'm more inclined to like appreciate it and like it. And honestly, no, all my meals don't look like that. So my meals look absolutely terrible. But I think for me, it's having like degrees of success. It's similar to what, you know, I said earlier, where like being first is the goal, but my actual like acceptable range of success might be between eighth and first, depending on where I'm in the season and what I believe I need to do to like achieve my ultimate goal. So your goal isn't to eat a certain food all the time, but your goal is to possibly have general better sleep habits, or emotionally regulate yourself, or to feel good in your body and have energy. And with respect to those goals, maybe making this sit down dinner that's fresh and all these amazing ingredients is perfect. We can't do that every day. That's unrealistic. But then what are your like second, third, and fourth degree things to that versus being like, oh, okay, I can't do this. I'm going to go get a burger, even though I don't really want a burger and it's just convenient. And I don't know, I'm just going to do it because I'm stressed. I have no other ideas. So yeah, like me plating all my food extra special, whatever, that's one variation of me, kind of like my top tier nutrition or like good eating. But then, you know, I have like these other levels of, all right, I'm in a pinch and I'm like upset or I'm tired and I'm not really feeling like putting all this effort into it. What can I still eat to fuel myself and move myself towards my ultimate goal of feeling good, being emotionally regulated, and being able to sleep?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think that when you have the opportunity, the time, whatever it might be, to plate your food and make it be something that's, you know, attractive to you, you're going to appreciate it more. And appreciation of food, I think, is huge in that mental relationship with it as well. So, but yeah, as an athlete, we're busy. Sometimes we just need a fuel. We're on the go. Is there anything that you have found that is unique to the sport of fencing? I know that, you know, obviously we talked about hydration and just like, just making sure you're nourishing your body. Is there anything, yeah, I guess just unique to the sport of fencing that you found is super important from a nutrition perspective? Or is it more just as long as you're taking care of your body and fueling your body, then that will also work for fencing?
So I don't do any other sports. I don't really watch a ton of other sports too, but our tournaments can take like 10 hours and you're periodically competing. So in like an international tournament, you personally might start at, let's say you started at like 9 o'clock. You may not compete again until like 11, 12, and then compete again at like 1 or 1:30. And you know what I'm saying? So like there's like breaks,
yep,
as much as like 2 hours, and then maybe as tight as like 30 minutes. But like random almost because of the way the tournament works and how they do it. So if you're fencing a whole tournament, it is like 10 hours with high intensity periods and then these like pauses, these like really big or sometimes short pauses, randomish pauses. And so hydrating and nourishing yourself for those are different. It's not just like you're playing a basketball game. You know you're going to be in this game for 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is. You fuel up before. A little bit of intermittent fueling, and then you fuel up after. You have to be able to sustain a certain level of energy spontaneously throughout 10 hours, which is not, I think, a thing that like most athletes do. And so I have a lot of snacks and a variety of snacks that I use in addition to having like that big, you know, trying to have like a good breakfast, possibly a good lunch. I have to kind of change up the way that I'm nourishing my body to accommodate for these needs for like bursts of energy and honestly bursts of recovery, like short recovery periods too, and trying to maintain a certain level of performance.
Yeah, absolutely. That was really insightful. So having probably multiple options, because it's a long day, you're gonna need lots of options and really dialing in.
You feel differently, you know, you have a taste or don't have a taste, right, for certain things.
Right. Yeah. You gotta prepare with lots and lots of options, make sure it's things that sustain your energy, and nutrient timing is going to come into play for you too.
Things that aren't going to make you crash, like certain bars or like, you know, you could technically eat candy before you compete. Some people like drink Coke, certain stuff, because that gives you a rush of sugar and energy if you're doing it for a period of time. But
yeah,
something at 10 a.m. that's going to make me crash at 2 p.m. is a no-go.
Don't. Right.
Or that's going to make me sluggish at that time, it's a no-go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm sure you've learned along the ways of, you know, what things are working for you, and it's a constant learning, I'm sure. So, well, thank you so much for sharing, you know, your background, your journey with sport, some of your nutrition and your aspire to inspire message. This has been a really insightful and motivating conversation. So I finish every podcast episode with the same 4 questions for all of my guests. So I'm going to finish this asking you the same as well. Iman, if there was one food that you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would that be?
I really like a good mango. Like a good mango.
Ooh.
I don't have to think about it too much because mangoes do taste kind of weird if you think about it. But it's like an interesting flavored fruit. And it has a great texture.
Yeah, I think that's a great fruit. It's really interesting and one that not everybody is exposed to, because at least in the US, because of where they're grown and everything. So obviously mango. Cool. This could be obvious, but you never know. What is your favorite sport to participate in?
I don't even like sports like that. Okay, I guess it's fencing. I'm not even good at sports. That's the funny part. Like, okay, I'm like an All-American and Olympic alternate, but I think there's some people who are like so, like their dexterity and their like agility, they have just like so really good at sports. I don't think I even view myself as like an incredibly sporty person, despite dedicating like half my life to it.
That's so funny.
So I guess I would say fencing because I do it, but I wouldn't
optionally
elect to play any other sport, period. I don't want to play sports. Yeah. I don't want to do it. Fencing, I'll do. I enjoy it. Like I said, I enjoy the entire experience of it. But if you're like, hey, you want to play a game? No, yeah. I don't. Can we do something else?
No. And that's okay. Yeah. Well, you can absolutely do other things. So I'm not sure if you'll have an answer for my next question. My next question is, what is your favorite spectator sport or sport to watch?
You know, I'm also going to brace my truth here. I don't watch sports. I don't. Yeah. I don't want any, none of them.
That's fine.
Not a single one of them.
Yeah.
Not even watch like the game shows.
What else? What do you like to do with your time then?
Like Survivor and whatnot. I don't do those either.
Yeah. Yeah, we could ask a totally different question for you then. Like, what if you could do something in your free time? What's your favorite thing to do?
I like having quality time with people. So I do crochet a lot. That's something that I do. I do it when I'm stressed, but I also do it when I want to like make something really pretty, which is enjoyable. I like cooking for friends. I like taking walks with people. Parks aren't my favorite because I'm allergic to bugs. But I think just mindful time with people is what I enjoy the most. Just like really being present with others. So yeah, just like, I guess so much of my other parts of my life are so busy and hectic and moving and traveling and all that stuff that I tend to like enjoy just being with others. Like that gives me a great sense of like joy and peace and calm. Cause like I'm traveling here and there and meeting all these people and I'm in New York and there's 100 new people on each subway cart. So I feel like for me, I find peace and joy and just the mundane movie. Maybe that makes me boring.
The quiet moments and the quality time. Yeah, no, I love that. And it makes complete sense, especially living New York City lifestyle. You know, you really appreciate those quiet moments and those quality moments. So awesome. And our very last question, Iman, if there is a female athlete out there that you want to give a shout out to for being inspiring, for being a role model, who would that be and why?
We're going to shout out Nzinga. Nzinga is like the blueprint for my life. She's a 2-time Olympian, Columbia graduate. Oh, she also has her own foundation called Peace, where she's educating young people how to fence. But I always shout her out. I think I'm someone who loves acknowledging and praising other people. And I'm like, I've known her my whole life. So maybe, I don't know, should I get tired of it? But I'm going to say it every day and every opportunity that I get. I'm very grateful that I was around her and was able to be inspired with her. So I can also kind of follow a similar path of greatness.
Beautiful. Yeah. Keep lifting up the people who we want to lift up over and over and over again. So thank you for sharing that. And again, thank you for coming on this podcast. We appreciate you and your time and wish you all the best in your athletics and everything else and so much more than that.
Thank you.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode and thanks for listening. But before I let you go, I have free resources that you can have access to right away, right now, so that you can start fueling your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. First, I have your Red S recovery race. If you've ever wondered if you might be struggling with Red S, curious to learn more, or know you have Red S and are looking to recover fast, then you can head to www.riseupnutritionrun.com/redS and download the Red S Recovery Race. See how you place and figure out the next steps to recovery. Plus, while there, I have a few other great resources for you, including 3 nutrition secrets that every elite athlete swears by and access to our private Facebook community, Female Athlete Nutrition. So again, to gain access to all of this, head to riseupnutritionrun.com/reds. That's /REDS. And you can gain access and get the help you need fast. Too many girls and women and female athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. Become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and I'll see you next time.